Whatever the name of this course is, what is the number of this stuff? I don't know.
788-4/880-02.
Welcome to that. And I'm glad that you took. So we just before you entered, we were introducing ourselves. So
Alex.
Alex. Nice to meet you. So you're a graduate student as well?
Yeah.
From who do you work with?
Laurent Fader.
Oh, Laurent Fader. Also, you're a student here.
Yeah.
Have you seen you? Sorry. Yes.
Perfect.
So this course is a bit different from the other courses that you must have seen as an undergrad or a graduate student. In a sense that it's not really a course, but it's not supposed to teach you science, but rather how to approach science as a research area. So I guess one of the goals of the actually looking at hand up is set up. You must have already seen this. It's slightly different from what you might have seen before. So this is just the details of the course. So the aim is not for you to learn physics or cosmology per se, although you definitely learn some on the way, but rather how to do research as cosmologist or as an astrophysicist. Now, the reason we thought of presenting something like this is that we think there is a gap between in the training of physicists or astronomers. And the gap is that you learn all the material at high school and college and graduate school. And at the end of the day, you're supposed to be a researcher. But nobody really teaches you how to be a researcher. So that's part of the job of your advisors. But it seems that most of the time, and that's my experience, for example, it's a very abrupt process that you learn all the material. And when you start the graduate school, you're supposed to become a researcher. But it's really there's really a learning curve. And this course is supposed to help you along that curve. So job of a researcher is to solve problems. But at least that's part of the job. Hello. How are you?
I have a question.
Yes.
I'm sure everybody knows that you're changing the room from bottom to everything.
That's a good point. Yeah, okay, so that explains why some people are writing English, maybe.
Should we see if there's a sign or something?
Yeah, maybe we should do that. Thank you. You make one. You have more than enough. So you have somewhat updated syllabuses for the course. So everybody is got one of these. So as I was saying, the aim of this course is to help you become a researcher. And of course, we're not sure if you're going to be successful, but we do our best. And basically, the aim of the course is for you, and for all of us, to learn how to approach problems. You start with simpler problems, end up with harder problems. But of course, at the end of the day, you're supposed to be researchers, independent researchers. And know how to approach problems that you face as astrophysicists or cosmologists or physicists in general. Okay, so we have three recommended textbooks for the course. So this book, Cosmology and Astrophysics Through Problems, is what inspired the course. And so this is not a problem book that would accompany a textbook, this is not a textbook. So this is something. This is more of a self-study book, but through problems. And I think this is a very good representation of how physics and astronomy in general looks like. Because of course, the actual astronomers and physicists throughout history, they didn't learn things by reading books. They learned them by observations and solving the problems that they face in trying to explain observations. So the knowledge that we have today in physics and astronomy hasn't come from textbooks, has come through solving lots of difficult problems most of them haven't been as well defined as the one that you find at the end of text. So this book is it may be a simulation, you could say, of that process that helps you along in learning astrophysics and cosmology through solving problems that, so you start with simpler problems and end up with harder problems. And we recommend you to actually go through this book on your own. So we're not going to be covering this book, we're not going to have time to cover this book fully, but this is something that if you're interested, and we really recommend it to spend your own time and go through it on your own. And we have, as I said, this is not a textbook, so you're not going to learn everything. So this is the old version. This is the used version, not the new version. So
it's also a little song reserve in the perimeter library and probably.
Yes. And so hopefully you're going to buy one that looks like this, and at the end of a semester it's going to look like this. Yeah. So as I said, this is not a textbook, so you're not going to find all the explanations in here. So these are the two other suggested books that we have for the course. So one of them is a classic, The Physical Universe, by Frank Shu, which is an excellent introduction to almost everything in astronomy and cosmology. It's very clear, very well written, and it's at the undergraduate level, but of course graduate students can learn from this, but you don't really need, but it's self-contained basically. You need all the knowledge that you require. You learn all the stuff, everything that you require to reading this book. And this is also at a similar level. It's more up to date. This is Introduction to Cosmology by Barbara Ritten. So this is a more modern account of things, and it's more oriented towards cosmology, but it's also very well written, and it explains things much more clearly than you would, for example, find in the solutions section of the Padmanabhan book. So as I said, these are all recommended texts, so throughout the course, our strategy is actually to give you problems, and you're supposed to come up with solutions in a week. So you have 7 days. So the first week, since we didn't have any prior meetings, we're going to solve for you some sample problems. But that's the only time that we're going to do that. So from this session on, you'll be the people who solve the problems. And every week, somebody will volunteer. So this, and I'll actually, shall I distribute both of these?
Yeah. I
can
just pass
them. Yeah, okay. I can just pass this on as well. Oh, and there's also a question. Okay. Let me pass on the question as well. Shall we do this at the end?
What? At the end?
Or now? Okay, let's just do it now. Yeah. So this is a questionnaire that is going to help. So please answer this. Sometime during the next couple of hours to finish that. So it's going to help us organize the course according to your experience or your interests. Now, so the first session. Thank you. So, did we run out of the other problems? No, that's what we're going to be. Okay. So, the first session, we are going to solve problems for you, solve some sample problems. Now, in the morning, I'm going to solve a problem in, a very key problem in radiative processes, basically, how an accelerated charge can radiate. And I'm guessing most of you must be familiar with that how an acceleration of a charge would lead to radiation, right? Have all of you known that before I said it? I guess. Okay. So then in the back there are two problems, and then there's another problem set that we just circulated. So there are, yes. So there are basically four problems that you're expected to do for next week. I'm not going to be here for the next couple of weeks, so Mark will be in charge of managing you guys. Okay.
I just say, in case you're worried, that we will give you the necessary preparation to do all of the problem sets. So even though you'll be presenting most weeks, we will also provide whatever new material is necessary. So you aren't going to be left completely on your own. Don't worry.
Yes. Absolutely. So we do our best to help you along. So at each week when we give you the problems, we're going to tell you a little, give you a bit of background about how to solve a problem and what is the necessary physics. Of course, as we progress, you're going to be more and more independent, hopefully, so you can work things out on your own. So each week, somebody should volunteer for presenting in the following week. So I guess you guys have until the end of day to decide which one of you is going to present for next week, right? Do we need more push or something?
Well, we'll see. One thing we should also clarify is that you saw the schedule is basically we're going to go from 10 to 11:30, and then there's a break, and then from 12:30 to 2, roughly. We've also arranged that schedule may be flexible. We've also arranged that at the PI Bistro, which is the restaurant that's in the building, that graduate students get a 50% discount on the menu. So you're not required to buy your lunch here, but you can bring it or you can go somewhere else if you like. But they've been gracious enough to offer this discount. So if you want to have a PI lunch, you can buy it for a significant discount. And that way you can just stay here and work through lunch, and you can ask us questions.
So I guess we can all go to the bistro upstairs at the end of the first session, and you guys can get a temporary card. That's done.
I think that's good.
Yes. So you guys.
So we'll introduce you to the staff, and they'll get you in the system.
Okay. Will that include parking passes if we need those?
Oh yeah, we can get those too if you need those.
Yeah. Do they need a parking pass?
Yeah. Just whoever needs a parking pass, let us know. Today, write it on your questionnaire, and we'll be sure that for the next time we'll have some ready.
Okay. Will I get fined for today? Or?
Probably. If you do, then we'll take care. We'll try to get it taken care of.
Yes, don't worry. So what else? So I guess part of the idea, before I forget, I should say this, part of the idea that you guys are presenting the your own solutions, that's also part of being a researcher, because it's not just solving the problems, but also the ability of presenting your solutions. That's the necessary part of being a physicist, because if you cannot present your findings, nobody would listen to them. So that's a tough way of putting it, but that's true. Okay. Good. So today in the morning, I'm going to tell you about a crucial problem in radiative processes, or basically the basic radiation, how it works. And in the afternoon, Mark will tell you about the gravitational process. And that's, I guess, the reason we started with these choices is that these are basically the most important processes that happen in astronomy. So it's radiative processes and gravitational processes, and everything is an extension of basic gravity and basic radiative physics. And you can imagine why radiation is so important for astronomy, because all what we see from most of the universe comes to us through its light. And that's why radiation is at the center of astrophysics. And basically that's one of the most basic things we want to know in astronomy and cosmology. Okay, so now here I'm going to present for you. Well, okay, so the problem, so the format of this book is, so this is the first problem in the book, in the Padmanabhan's book. And as I said, the format of the book is to teach you through solving your problems. Now I'm going to try to do this, the first one for you. Now, the idea is that you know how electrostatics work, you know the Coulomb's law, and you know something about a special relativity. Now, how many of you have learned about a special relativity, or not necessarily a course, but something about a special relativity in one of the courses? think how all of you know. Good. Great. So here we're going to combine our knowledge of electrostatics and combine our knowledge of electrostatics with our knowledge of.
Yeah, if we need to move these, we can, these tables are mobile, so we can flip these around if you want. Maybe that's probably the best thing to do, is just flip a couple of these around so people can.
Okay.
You don't move those two back. I can actually these two just stay, you just move around them.
Uh-huh.
If you can just move, yeah, if y'all can just move them this way.
Yeah, you guys can move the others, huh?
Alright, we're making this up as we go, so.
Yes. Sorry, guys. One thing else, I guess, I should mention, and this is something that you may not have expected, I'm not sure. For some reason, physicists and astronomers seem to be working in CGS units. And I never understood why, but that seems to be the norm. And you don't learn this in undergraduate but college, but somehow, when you make a transition, you realize that everybody uses CGS. Is that fair? Yeah. Somehow. And although there are even simpler, sometimes also people use national unit space and everything equal to one. These are even advanced, but these are all based on CGS units. So we're not going to do that just yet. But if you're familiar with different units, so there is SI units and so on, we are using CGS, so we're using centimeter. Grams and seconds. So I guess that's interesting. So now in CGS units, electric field of a charge is just the charge divided by r squared, the distance to the charge squared. So this is a static charge, the static form of charge. And the potential. Electric potential is just Q divided by R. And the vector potential, because of course this is fixed, is zero. So this is all you need in, all you learn in, well, you learn all this in freshman physics or sophomore physics. Now, the next step is, and something that is very cool, you wouldn't expect this, is that this combination phi and A in general in a special relativity looks very much like time and space. In a sense that they are form vectors and they transform in the same way under Lorentz transformation. So if you go from a fixed frame, from the lap frame to a moving frame, you can use Lorentz transformations to convert observed coordinates. So I guess there's a c squared here, and then x. So it's, now I'm assuming that your prime is your moving frame in velocity v in the x direction, and the unprime p and x are the lap frame. I hope I'm not running out of signs. And then y prime of y, c prime equals z. Now, the interesting thing is these guys also behave the same way. So knowing this and the potentials for a fixed charge, you can actually work out the potential, electric potential, and vector potential, the scalar potential and vector potential for a moving charge. Okay, so that's the knowledge that hopefully we all know, we all have. Oh, there's something else in here.
Yes. I have a question. Do you think the full potential should transform as the inverse of the coordinate transformation?
Yes, it should. Yes, because so this is a four vector algebra. So this is usually represented by x mu, where mu equal to zero is t, and mu equal to mu equal to 1, 2, or 3 are 3, 4 units. And this is represented by A mu, where A0 is the potential, and A1, A2, A3 are the vector potential. Okay. So they have the same kind of the same transformation, the Alvedores transformation.
Can you guys see this lens goes up there?
No. Let's keep it down here. So now. So this is all the knowledge that we need. Now, the problem that we have before us is that you have a static charge. Of course, it obeys these relations, this formula. And then it starts accelerating for a short period of time. Delta t by delta t is small. And after that, it just moves with a constant velocity. So you have this small time, delta t, during which velocity is changing by a constant acceleration. So that's, so this is the small period, I can plot it as a vector in a space-time diagram, for example. X versus t was constant and accelerating for a short period, and then it moves with a constant velocity. So here velocity is A delta t. And here velocity is zero. And there's a short period delta t. Now, our task is to find that the statement is that this acceleration, even though it's a very short period of acceleration, it can cause an electric field that doesn't fall as r squared as it does in the statics, but rather falls as 1 over r. So it can be much stronger than the electrostatic field, large distances. And that's what people call radiation. Because if electric field goes as 1 over r, the energy flux, which is the pointing vector, which is energy flux, E cross B, which goes as, for radiation, it goes as energy squared, sorry, electric field squared. This goes as 1 over r squared. So this is the energy flux that goes as 1 over r squared. So this is the law that you expect from radiating source, say, for example, sun. The energy flux per unit area, it falls off as 1 over r squared. And that happens if energy, so that's why the radiation electric field should be like 1 over r. And our first problem in this book is to show that's what happens if you have a short period of acceleration. So the way we do this is very tricky, and it's not the most rigorous way of doing it, at least the way that the book wants us to do it, but rather a simpler way that doesn't require as much calculation as you would usually see in electrodynamics books, but can give you the right answer in a much faster. So this is not necessarily how you solve every problem, but if you can learn techniques like this, trying to estimate things as this problem suggests, then you can get to the answer much quicker for many problems than you would if you try to do it rigorously. So the problem first wants us to find the electric field for a moving charge. Now, of course, this regime and this regime, they are both in the realm of, especially can, but just with this knowledge, we can solve the problem. And of course, we know information properties with the speed of light. So if you imagine a sphere of radius c times t, let's say that the charges start accelerating at time 0 until time delta t, so this is time 0. Let's say. All the points that are outside this sphere of c times t, they didn't know about acceleration, right? Because the information hasn't reached them yet. So they still think that the charge is sitting there and has a Coulomb law that's given by this relationship. Okay, so this is just the fact that information propagates with the speed of light in electromagnetism and the special relativity, that's true. However, the guys that are inside know that the charge isn't really constant anymore. It's not fixed, it's moving with some velocity now. So they do react to the motion of the charge, and they actually see the boosted electric field that is obtained by boosting this potential through the Lorentz transformation. Now most of the places here, they only see the effect of acceleration, but the acceleration happens for a short time. Say a small shell around the CT sphere. Everywhere inside of it, the effect of acceleration propagates with the speed of light, so it's gone, it's long gone. So only the guy at the points within a very thin shell of thickness C delta T, more or less, know that, so this is of course rough, know that there was an acceleration. All the guys inside know that this is moving, there's a charge here that's moving with some velocity V. And you can find this electric field, electric and magnetic field from boosting the static electric field. And all the guys out here know that, don't know about the acceleration and movement. They they still think there is a fixed charge there. Now, what the book wants us, what the problem asks us to do is to try to interpolate between this field and that field and show that there would be actually a radiation field here that falls off as one of our R rather than one of our R squared. And the way it's done is very tricky. It's very, very interesting, actually. So as I said, this is... these guys, I can just use the boost. So in the moving frame, in the prime frames, the charge is fixed, right? However, the charge and the charge and its frame are moving together in the lap frame. So you can just use these relationships to find A and phi in the lap frame. So what this gives you is that A. So I have to, if I want to find x and b from t and x, so just first let me write down the inverse of this and use the actual, use phi and a instead of x and t. So like, this is just a prime plus b phi divided by c squared. And did I do this right? No, there is no CS squared here. Okay. So this relationship is the inverse of this relationship. and phi is gamma. So by the way, gamma, if you all remember, is 1 over square root of 1 minus u squared, by the way. Phi prime plus v and a prime divided by c. Okay, so one thing I think that there's probably a c somewhere.
Yeah, where is v and phi?
Mm-hmm.
First expression on a. A prime plus v over c.
Okay, there is, yes, there's. These all have, yes, 1 over c in them. Okay, so I guess one thing is, okay, so this guy actually looks like this, if I'm correct. So ct and x, this duo looks like this duo. Because, of course, we want this, if these are components of the vector, they need to have the same dimension, and ct has the same dimension as x. And phi and a in ct students have the same dimension. So there's this relationship is symmetric for A and phi. And of course, AY is A prime Y, and AZ is A prime Z. Okay. So if we have this in the rest frame of the charge, so these are really phi prime and R prime, and A prime, these are in the rest frame of the charge. In the lap frame, you find A to be basically, so because A prime is zero, it's just gamma. B over C times. Times phi prime, which is 2 divided by R prime. And were you looking for us upstairs or no?
Yes, I was lost upstairs. waiting for half an hour actually.
Just the sign was an obvious one. I put a little sign at the front of the theater.
Yeah, somebody showed me the sign, but okay. I just couldn't notice it. I just left the stairs and wait half an hour.
I'm sorry.
Yes, sorry. There's a conference upstairs. I think eventually this is going to be the final menu. I'm not sure. Is this going to be the final menu?
I'm not sure. I don't think it's been settled.
Yeah, so it must be decided depending on how many students there are. I think this is more informal, but if there are too many of us, we have to.
Well, in the next couple of weeks, I'll be sure to send. You'll get an email with the definition. Okay.
Yes.
Your email address.
Yes, you guys are going to write down your email address. So there is a four. Oh, okay, so there's a bunch of things.
Yeah, I'll pass you that while you're.
Oh, good, good. Thanks. So let's see. So let's recap what we've done. What we were doing. So I want to boost the electric field of a static charge using Lorentz transformation, because in a special relativity, a scalar and vector potential behave like T and X. Using those relationships, A becomes gamma times V over C times 2 divided by R prime. That's phi prime. And phi, because A prime is 0, it's just gamma times phi prime. Okay. Good? So this is just Lorentz transformation of the electric field of a static charge. And R prime is the distance in the rest frame of the charge. So R prime is really, I should use this relationship to find R prime. R prime squared is gamma squared. Well, R prime squared is x prime squared plus y prime squared plus z prime squared. Just out of curiosity, how many of you say Z, how many of you say Z? Yeah. The Z, raise their hands. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. So slightly more Z's than that. We are in Canada, so I can just substitute from there. It's gamma squared times x minus vt squared plus y and z are the same as y prime and z prime. Okay. So these are the potentials in the lap frame that you see inside the shell. Outside the shell, you see just the static potentials before the charges start moving. And here, in this thin shell, you have to interpolate between these guys and these guys. Right? Now, just by looking at these relationships, it's not hard to imagine where you get an electric field that falls off as 1 over r. So electric field that falls off as 1 over r is what can cause radiation. And the way you can see that is that electric field is minus graph by plus a dot, I believe, divided by c. Now, or is it times c? Maybe. Okay, so I don't remember where the c is. I think it must be divided by c. Yes, that makes sense. If a and phi have the same dimension, then this must be divided by c. So the vector potential out here is zero, and in here is proportional to V over C. And the change happens within a short time of delta T, because you have this shell of thickness delta T, because that's the duration of the acceleration. So the charge was fixed first, accelerated within a period of delta T. And after that, it's moving with the velocity of A times delta T. So the vector potential goes from zero to this value within a short period of delta t. So you can say that this guy E is going to be proportional to at least this part of it. Let's look at this part of it. This part of it is going to be proportional to this guy, gamma V divided by C times q divided by r prime divided by delta t. Right? Because a goes from zero, so I'm just using the definition of derivative, time derivative. A goes from zero to some value, so its time derivative should be of order of the change divided by delta t. And this goes as 1 over r, or r prime, but they are more or less the same, depending, assuming that. Well, about large distances. Large, if x is very large, then vt is negligible. So, and assuming that velocity isn't too relativistic, gamma is also approximately 1. So you have an electric field that falls off as 1 over r. And v divided by delta t is just acceleration. So gamma, I said, assuming that velocity isn't very relativistic, this is approximately 1, and what you end up is q times acceleration divided by c times alpha, or r, as I said, so they're approximately the same. So this is more of a dimensional argument, because, well, I haven't taken into account the vector nature of this, and also I haven't taken into account this other guy. This guy also does something which I haven't demonstrated here. But just this part, below it goes from zero to some finite value, so the time derivative of that, but A goes from zero to a finite value, so the time derivative is just going to be the change divided by delta t, which gives you the electric field that falls off as 1 over r. Now, as I was telling you, the energy flux, the pointing vector, is just d cross p. And I think in CGS units, there's a c divided by 4 pi in front of it. So that would fall off as 1 over r squared for this, if electric field is causes 1 over r. So you can actually find the power that is radiated. So this is roughly 4 pi r squared times the Poynting flux, which is c over 4 pi. This is really an estimate. C over 4 pi times E squared. And we already calculated E squared here, the electric field here. So 4 pi is canceled. But this is roughly C R squared, Q squared, A squared, divided by C squared, R squared. R squared cancel, and I believe I'm missing a C somewhere. Oh yes, there was a C down here. Okay, this is really C to the fourth. And this is the formula here that the problem wants us to find. Right? All right.
Is it?
Okay. So it's interesting. It's just a combination of, it's not quite dimensional analysis. The dimensional analysis is just looking at what has the right dimension. But it's just estimating the order of the terms that appear in your equation. You can arrive at the right relationship for how much up to numerical factor. There could be a numerical factor here, but you can arrive at the right relationship for how much power is radiated from an accelerating charge. And as I also promised you, this is actually the electric field that dominates at large distances because this decays as 1/r. But these guys decay as one of, when they're static electric field, decays as 1/r². So at large distances, you only see the radiation field. You don't see the static field. Something else that we have to go still a little bit beyond this to derive is the direction of electric field. And this is also very important because the direction of electric field of the radiation tells you the polarization of emission. Of course, polarization is very important for many astrophysical observations. To see that, it's interesting to look at the picture how things behave. Now, what I didn't do for you, but you can easily do, is to, from this potential, vector and scalar potential, you can find the electric field. And so what I just did for you was to estimate electric field in this thin shell, but within the shell, outside the shell in here, velocity is constant. So you can just take the time derivative and gradient of these guys and find the electric field. It turns out that the electric field, assuming that gamma is 1, so basically first order in P is just the ordinary electric field that you have. But towards the instantaneous position of the charge. So this is r prime squared times r prime. There isn't it's r prime squared here is that it's really r prime that enters. So it's a distance in. Is the boosted distance that, if gamma is 1, this is just a Galilean transformation. So r prime is just the distance to where the charge is now, rather than where the charge was to begin with. And our prime hat points to the direction where the charge is now. So the pictorial representation of that is that you have this sphere, or I can just plot it here. You have this sphere of radius ct. Outside of it, everything is pointing radially from the center of the sphere. Inside of it, the electric field lines are actually pointing away from where the charge is right now. So this is how the electric field lines look like inside the sphere. This is how they look like outside the sphere. So outside they are all emitting from the center of the sphere. Inside they are all emitting, well, it's not really emitting, but they're coming out from where the charge is right now. And that's, so I haven't done that, but you can just do that by taking the gradient of this, using this relationship, gradient and under integral goes, right? And find electric field, assuming that gamma is all is one. That is velocity. This is means velocity is much smaller than the speed of light. So based on that picture, so what you really have is so let's just look at one of these field lines and what's happening to it. So there is this shell. Well, that's slightly more tilted. There is this shell. Outside of it, you are looking at, you don't know the charge has moved, so you just see the original position of the charge. So your electric field lines look like this. So there is an idea, probably like this, is that your, well, that's so this is supposed to be very far away. So let's say the charge is sitting down here. Well, okay, now this is not a good way of plotting it. Well, okay, so you know what I'm talking about. So the charge was sitting here originally. Now it's moving after, but now it's moving with some velocity v. Now it's here, and as time progresses, it moves farther away. Outside this shell, because light hasn't propagated far enough, the electric field is just pointing to the original position. Now electric field is coming out from the instantaneous position of the charge, which is here. So the electric field lines are here, are pointing to the instantaneous position of the charge. And they should somehow go from here to here in this shell. So this is a bit tricky, and it's not a very rigorous argument, but it's really more of an intuitive one where you think you're dragging the electric field lines. So here, electric field lines are just sitting because they haven't noticed the motion of the charge. Here, the electric field lines are moving with the charge. So these guys are moving. They are being carried by the charge. And in this shell, you have to interpolate between these guys and these guys. The thickness of the shell is the duration in which acceleration happens, c times delta t. And this distance is v delta t. This is how far you have stretched the field line. It's vt. So t is how much time has passed, the total time. But the thickness is just the duration of the acceleration. Right? Does this make sense? So this is just how much the charge has moved from the beginning. So there's this brief initial period, that's going to change this. But assuming that this initial period is short enough, the total distance traveled is just v times t, which is A times delta T times T. So it's interesting that what this picture suggests is that there must be a transverse component to the electric field. So you will start with a radial electric field. Inside you have a radial electric field, outside you have a radial electric field. But the very fact that you're dragging the electric field line with a charge suggests that in this in-between region, there must be a transverse electric field. And you can, just based on this simple geometry, you can say that the transverse electric field called E pair divided by the parallel electric field. Yeah, so then basically this component of electric field divided by this component of the electric field, it should be Vt divided by C delta T. Right? And V is just A times delta T. So this is A T divided by C. Right. Now, I haven't made any mistake yet. I hope not. Okay. So that tells us what is the direction of this, the ratio of the transverse to radial electric field. But the other thing that we know is that you know Gauss's law, that if I take, for example, a small cylinder here. This is my cylinder. The electric field that enters the cylinder should be the same as the electric field that exits, or the flux should be the same, but since the area of the cylinder are the same here, upside and downside, that means electric field, radial electric field should be the same. So E parallel, I know what it is, it's just the Coulomb stuff. It's just Q divided by R squared, which is C Q divided by C S squared, T squared, right? Or let me keep R here. I can change this color. Instead of C T, I put an R. This is A times R divided by C. And T squared. This is the exact. Now, there is, however, a catch here, the way I've written this. It's just the velocity projected into the shell that matters, right? This is really just the perpendicular velocity that matters. If there is a velocity that's going into the shell, if there's a radial velocity, if the charge is moving this way, there is no dragging. Right? So it's only the component of the velocity that is perpendicular to the radial direction. That's the component of the velocity that drags the field lines. You see that that's clear? So it's just, all I'm saying is that if the charge is moving radially, it doesn't drag the field lines. Only the component that's transverse, V per, so if, like if there are two components, the velocity or acceleration, there's V pair, V parallel. It's also only the V pair that matters. So it's really here only the V pair, and A pair. And this is perpendicular to the radial direction. This is the only component that matters. So we have like the same relation that we have here, basically, if you combine these two guys. This says that E perp is A perp R divided by C squared times Q divided by R squared. So this cancel, and this is essentially what we had there. This is a slightly more rigorous than what we have here. This was because we were kind of ignoring the direction of this. But now I actually keep the direction. I actually know what the direction is. The direction is transverse. there is this component keeper, which also has 1 over r, although the radial key also has 1 over r squared, the transverse key is 1 over r. So by this exercise, by this simple geometrical picture, I actually have gotten the geometry of the radiation field. So the geometry of radiation field is in the direction of the acceleration projected into the plane of the sky, or on the component of acceleration that's perpendicular to the line of sight. So this is the component of acceleration or velocity that's perpendicular to the line of sight. So this is the line of sight. This is where I'm looking at the electric field. And only the component that's perpendicular matches. And that gives me the transverse electric field. So now you can actually, so this way you can actually get the actual value of electric field and find the radiated energy from this relationship, and you will find that there is a factor of 2/3 here. And the 2/3 is really the average of sine squared of theta over this sphere, which comes from the fact that it's the projected value of acceleration in each direction that matters, not the acceleration itself. So in other words, if I'm sitting here, there is no projected value of acceleration, because acceleration is radial, is along the line of sight. So there is no radiation field here, or here. So the radiation field here is maximum, because there is no radial acceleration. There is no radial, if you're looking at the radiation, this point, there is no radial component of acceleration. All of it is transverse. And the actual relationship is just what I had here times sine of theta, where theta is, should I say sine or cosine? Right, sine of theta, where theta is this angle. It's the angle of the direction in which you're looking at radiation be the direction of acceleration. So you're observing here. How do eyes look like? Forgot that rather. Anyway. And this is acceleration, and this is theta. And the radiation field is proportional to A times sine theta. The radiated power is the square of that, so that's sine squared. And you have the average sine squared over the sphere. That gives you a factor of 2/3. Now, this relationship, although this may not be the usual way of arriving at it, this relationship is very general. Because factor of 2/3, it tells you basically how much energy you expect to see from an accelerating charge. And it doesn't match, it doesn't need, you don't need to have this simple acceleration profile. Any kind of acceleration that you can have, as long as it doesn't vary very fast. And that's an interesting question you can think about on your own, that how fast should acceleration change with time for this relationship to fail. But as long as acceleration doesn't change very fast, it's this relation is general. So any charge that's moving in space, you can use this relationship to see how much energy it loses. And there are very interesting, I guess you could say, philosophical questions here. For example, for example, if this is the energy that you lose, you can put this on the right-hand side of the Newton's equation, right? Let's not get to that. So just my mind on this. You can actually, the one thing that you can do on your own is to show that this, you can show that this could be interpreted as a force that's proportional to the derivative of acceleration, right? To the third derivative of x. So there is the, so if a charge is accelerating, there is a force, the so-called self-force, due to radiation. And you can imagine it's losing energy because it's radiating. But the force that it has, it's proportional to the derivative of acceleration. So, does that make sense? No. Actually, that doesn't make sense to me either. Well, this is the obvious, that the energy that you lose is like that, looks like that. So, yes. So let's see, what else? So this is all the problem asks you to do, to derive this relationship. And the two problems that you're supposed to solve for next week asks you to use this relationship to solve two relevant astrophysical problems. One is one is the Thomson scattering, basically, which is how photons are scattered off electrons, what is a cross section of scattering of photons off electrons. It's very relevant for cosmology and cosmic microwave background analysis. And another is synchrotron and Bremerschallen radiation, which is what happens when charge to charges, electrons, basically are accelerated either via magnetic fields in nature, star medium, for example, or by scattering off protons or ions in the anywhere in the universe. And again, you can use this relationship to find the emission spectrum. So what else?
Just one question on the problems. If these are the ones for next week, is the problem set you pass out this just for practice or do you use some other plan?
No, the four are for next week, actually. So there are the first two are these other yes.
Oh.
So there are four problems for next week. The two problems from Padmanabhan and two other problems that you are in the handout. Right? So just since many of you may not have Padmanabhan, we decided to give you the Padmanabhan problems. Okay, so there are four problems that I'll do next week. And what else? Okay, so something I forgot to mention. So the polarization of the electric field is in the plane, as you can imagine, in the blackboard, basically. So electric field, your acceleration is in this direction, electric field has this kind of polarization. It's transverse and is transverse, but in the same plane that the acceleration is. So if you have a charge that's accelerating in this direction, polarization everywhere is the projection, polarization of the electric field everywhere is the projection of the acceleration into the plane of the star, right? So I cannot really draw a three-dimensional picture here. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that this is your sky, and your electron is accelerating in this direction. The polarization is projection of it into the plane of the sky. So here you have your polarization is this way, here it goes this way, and so on. So, and this is general in any scattering. I'm mixing something with this. Well, anyway, this is what you get from this exercise. That this is the polarization of the radiation. It's going to be it's basically the component of a projected into plane of sky. Okay. Yes.
Please explain. I mean, how did you know that the polarization should be in this direction?
How do I know?
The polarization.
Okay.
How did you interpret it?
Yes. I guess here it's just symmetry, basically. So the acceleration is in this plane, right? So if this is the blackboard, this is a sphere. The acceleration is this display. So the electric field cannot point at inside or outside the plane, right? Because of the symmetry. Each paper is pointing. Because the both sides are the same. So it's, in this simple problem, it's just a question of symmetry. That symmetry only allows the electric fields to be inside the plane, because there is no difference between the right hand side of the plane. But of course, you can get it from this picture as well. This picture exactly tells you that the transverse electric field is the transverse velocity. It's proportional to the transverse velocity. So that's why the direction should be the same. So the transverse velocity is, here I assume it's in the plane, so that means the transverse electric field is also in the plane. Right? So, it's not there. But you think, well, yeah, you should think about it. Let's see if there's any better way to explain this. So it's very important to be able to explain your ideas because, well, not everything is a standard, so if people don't understand what you say, that means you're doing something wrong. So hey, I'm doing something wrong here. So, I don't know. It's just that you're dragging these electric fields in the direction of the projected V in the plane, not the sky. So that means that since you're dragging them in this direction, the component is going to be proportional to the same. It's going to be in this. The component of the transfer flow is going to be in the same direction that the gradient. So, and this is not an exact picture, more of an intuitive one. More exact way would be to. Well, I guess you have really two different pictures, and both of them tell us more or less the same thing. That. Okay, I'm going around the circle. I don't know. I don't have a better explanation. So do any of you have a better way of explaining why the electric field should be proportional to the projected acceleration? No?
Could it be something like if you had like a pudding or something and you drag it like this way, the center of it, then the field lands at the point?
Yeah, that's an intuitive picture that has triangular. Yes, indeed. Yeah, I think that's really the. This is only intuitive. Short of doing actually calculating the electric field exactly from either these equations or solving Maxwell equations, that's really the only way to explain it is that you're dragging something, electric fields in some direction, so the electric fields that are generated will be generated in that direction. It's really a kind of symmetry argument, and which is the simple explanation, and nothing more. But it's very important because, I mean, not everything is so simple, but if you can generalize, and the fact is that you can generalize a simple picture, if you have something much more complicated, but you have several intervals of acceleration, the radiation that's generated by every interval of acceleration causes radiation with this polarization. Now, if in the next instant acceleration is in a different direction, then the direction of polarization changes. And you have to add everything together at the end of the day. So, that's the first problem. I expect you to do a better job than I did. Right? Okay. So
we have time left, everybody can fill out their questions.
Yes, that would be nice. You can fill out the questionnaire or ask questions.
Or both,
yes. Or both. Yeah, so these are the same thing. Well, the first two problems are these. So let me just show you. So the first two problems in this problem set one is the handout, the other handout that we've given you. It's discussed Kafia Padmanabhan. The third and fourth problems are in the first handout, and so there are four problems that are due for next year. And somebody by the end of second after that, by the end of the afternoon session, should volunteer to present the solutions.
Well, you can have more than one person.
Doing all four solutions. Hmm? One person is doing all four questions.
Mm-hmm. That, yeah, I guess that would work too.
Yeah. Everyone will be required to present an equal number of times. So you can either volunteer, or you can be
volunteers.
Or you can be volunteers. So just keep that in mind. Obviously, if anyone is, or your grade will suffer. I mean, that's a big part of the grading process. I don't think people will expect this class to be helpful, but you're not going to learn anything unless you do the work, so that's the point. We're here to help you get better, because then you're not going to be judged. This is the point, is to teach yourself, not to embarrass you. Yes, and so we'll be happy to give extra help to whoever's going to be volunteering.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I'll do the modified copy. I'll ask the machines first.
Well, I'm gonna give a background.
Okay, I guess should I turn off the microphone? Yeah.